Hi everyone. It's kind of loud. Good afternoon. So I'm stand-in. I'm Professor Brad Campbell. If we haven't met, Professor Rice is at the CS Education Conference. And so it's once a year focused on sort of all things about computer science education. So I'm here today. We're going to try our best. Where we left off last time, this slide looks familiar, right? From the end of, right? And so kind of picking up things, I mean, our sort of the topic for today is a little bit sort of like, what are some of the defenses that for some of the attacks that we've seen, what could they look like? And this one, where's the... All right, this idea that like it's okay to write data to memory and it's okay to execute instructions, but maybe it would make sense that we shouldn't be able to do both. We shouldn't be able to write instructions and then execute them. And so we want to, and this should be what's happening? Hey, why is my pen not working? Okay, well, this should be not executable, of course. And, right, so the benefit being that that's sort of a tool, right, to make it a little bit more difficult to, if you can figure out how to write your own code, then to prevent it from being executed. So we need hardware support for this, right? We need to be able to mark this so that the processor knows not to execute instructions that are from certain pages or, but still allow writes or vice versa. But you know, this is actually not that difficult to implement in hardware. But it is a limited use, right? I think it's somewhat intuitive, but it's not meant to be the end-all solution. You know, part of the issue is that things like just-in-time compilers. Okay. I figured it out. I bet that's what happened. Okay. Interesting. Hold on a second, sorry. We'll spend a lot of time on this slide. What? Maybe. Okay, that's really not. Okay, it's not meant to be. Okay, so A just-in-time compiler is like looking at sort of some sort of higher level program and then trying to generate instructions. Well, that's sort of exactly this use case, right? We're at runtime writing instructions and then trying to execute them. And so approaches have worked around this by sort of flipping between. So they start with a page just writable, not executable, write the instructions, and then swap it from make it no longer writable but executable and execute. And some other use cases. And so in some cases, right, it's sort of, this is I think a part of a defense in depth approach where when it's when it fits what the application wants to do, great, let's add it just as another layer, but it's not going to completely solve the problem. And so I think this intuition that like, hey, if we can implement this, it's not a lot of overhead, great. Like, why not? However, it does only target this case where the attacker wants to be able to write their own instructions, whereas a lot of attacks, and as we'll see in the next, I think, the next couple weeks, the instructions are already there, right? They're part of the original program. And the attacker's just trying to execute what's already there, And so they don't really need to write additional instructions. And so the, oh, I keep forgetting, I can't do that. So the kind of the end result being here being that the useful code is usually already in the program, particularly if it's an interesting program that's, you know, widely used. And so the attacker's goal is really, it's not so much about generating new instructions, but looking for existing pieces of machine code, chain those together to accomplish the attack. Make sense? Any questions? Okay. So, what else can we do? Right, kind of the next question. And with this kind of thought in mind, right? The instructions are already there. The attacker is trying to run them strategically. Well, it's going to be difficult to eliminate any useful gadgets or instructions in the code, because that's going to limit what we can do as programmers. But one idea is, what if we make them harder to find? Because the attacker, still, it's their responsibility, right? Part of what they would have to do is find where those instructions or gadgets they want to use are, so that they can actually get the processor to use them in some way, right? And part of that is going to be, okay, we could take a program, look at the machine code. That's probably known, especially if it's like an open source program, or they can somehow get a copy of it. Okay, fine. But there is still a question of, like, where is that going to be located when it executes? Because it's not just about what's in the compiled binary, but it's also about where is it when it's running. And so that leads to this another idea, ASLR, address space layout randomization. And the intuition here is, what if we make it harder to find where particular structures are going to actually be located? Like, which memory address are they going to be? Not sort of when they're compiled, but when they're actually executing. And then, of course, as the title suggests, and this is what makes it harder, right, is it's random. So there's uncertainty. And so it's the exact same program doing the exact same thing, but even on the same machine running two different times would have very different addresses that it's using. And so if the attacker is thinking, like, okay, I know that I have this thing here at this particular point or part of the program and I want to use it, well, now they have to figure out where it's actually going to be when that program is running. Does that make sense? And so to do this, we're going to choose these random addresses every single time we run the program. And we can do this for multiple pieces of the program. So not just the stack, we can do it for the actual code and data as well. Now, sort of again, as the name kind of implies, there has to be a level of randomization uncertainty that makes this hard. So we need to have enough options that essentially the operating system has to support enough possible places such that it's not too easy or it's not probable that the attacker will just be able to guess. And so if we can do this, this sort of helps prevent these exploits, because now you don't know exactly where things are located. Good? Okay. So, well, that's okay. This is one thing, right? This is sort of easy to say. Like, yeah, just load the program in different addresses, right? But if you kind of think about it, it's like, well, wait a minute. You know, addresses are kind of important, right? We can't just choose them sort of completely arbitrarily, or at least that's not going to just work. And so, this idea of we have to actually be able to compile programs differently to support this. And so I'm assuming from the title that you've looked at this, at least in some level in the past, where depending on how programs are compiled, they can support this idea of being position independent or not. Now, with virtual memory, we sort of have this ability to kind of fabricate the address space for programs. And so even if we have two programs that expect to be at the same address, we can totally support that. And this is kind of saying like, well, even with that, maybe we don't actually always want to do that. We want to be able to have a program run and support different addresses. And so just to kind of highlight here, right, this is sort of meant to be a specific address where this code needs to run with things loaded at this particular address, because that the addresses are going to be directly referenced by the machine code, versus something that's dynamic, where, okay, this is likely not a valid place to load the program anyways. But the idea is that wherever it does get loaded, it can adapt, right? It's dynamic, it's position independent, it will work even at different addresses. Okay, and we'll dig into this a little bit more as we go. So for example, if we just look at, say, randomizing the stack, what Linux will do is it has sort of a range of possibilities. And so when it's deciding where it should place the stack for a particular process execution, it's going to choose between this sort of this range of possible values, right? And this sort of maps to a pretty big memory range. And then it's going to, the stacks grow down, right? So it's going to choose something at the top, sort of offset that a random amount, and then that's where it's going to place the stack. So it's not the full 64-bit address space, because that really wouldn't quite work. But it's still a pretty large search area, right? There's a lot of different options where the stack could end up. And so the attacker is going to have to sort of deal with that in some way if they're going to use specific addresses that are in the stack. If we sort of zoom out to the sort of rest of the program here, here we have our address space, our 64-bit address space, and just kind of highlighting that the different portions of the program can be placed at different sort of offsets depending on what was selected. And just one thing to point out that this is a 64-bit address space, right? x86-64. And so while we're never going to need 2 to the 64 memory addresses, this is sort of another benefit of having a large address space. Even if we don't actually we would never need to use it, this gives us sort of the extra bits, right? Extra spots to put things to do exactly this, for example. Make sense? Any questions? Okay, and so if we look at 32 bits, same kind of idea, 32-bit x86, except right now, of course, we have fewer sort of less room to play with. So this has a direct impact on how well this is going to work. And so everything is going to be still aligned to different to the page size. So we lose 12 bits right away just because those are the bits for the page. With 64 remaining bits, right, we have a ton of extra room. And we have a lot of flexibility on where things could go. And so now the potential position would require a lot of guesses. However, with smaller address spaces, right, it's not quite as good because we still need those 12 bits for the page, but then because we have to fit other parts of the program in, our number of randomized bits is much lower. And so we might only have about 8 bits of flexibility on where to place things. So definitely you can see this idea of randomization, while it shouldn't really matter the address size, the actual impact and how well it's going to work is going to have a big impact based on how big our address space is. Okay, you know, but even so, you know, millions, that's a big number for us. Or if I asked you to guess a number and I, you know, from 1 to 100 million, right? It might take us a while. But like computers, I mean, come on, a million, that's not a big number. Right, we certainly wouldn't do encryption and security with 30 bits. So I think a reasonable question is like, even still, is this effective? Because 30 bits is not that many in sort of that context of guessing. Well, you know, if you think about what kind of guesses we actually get, right? And so an attacker very well may get multiple guesses. However, some guesses are going to be bad, right? And now, say the attacker is wrong, the program accesses an invalid memory location, and that crashes the program. Well, it might restart, right? So, you know, server... A lot of applications are meant to run forever, and even if they have a bug in them or something weird went wrong, we still want them to come back, right? And so they'll be restarted, but now they'll be restarted at a different address. So the attacker sort of has to start over, but that does give them sort of more, you know, more chance, right? Or maybe we can just keep running the program because it's local. It might crash a child process, but not the whole thing, or it might just not crash. So the attacker is sort of constrained because some guesses will be so wrong that they crash the program and then have to start over again. Other guesses, maybe not. And so we want the attack to be difficult enough, but at the same time, it's going to be difficult to do millions of guesses without causing a crash. So let's look at sort of an example and spend a couple minutes sort of thinking through, like, if we have a 32-bit address space, what does this sort of guessing look like? Right? So if we're trying to find the stack, let's just say we're just looking for the stack. And that we now have those sort of 8 bits, so 256 possible locations. And we can sort of keep going because the server will restart. So if we don't get it on the first try, we can try again. We have sort of this allocation for the stack layout. How difficult is this going to be? How many tries, you know, roughly speaking, would it take to actually be able to find the stack in this case? So you're welcome to chat with your neighbors, and we'll regroup in a couple minutes. All right, any intuition, thoughts on how difficult this is going to be? Yeah.
So I was just thinking, because we have like 20 kilobytes for our, that we can use as kind of like a knob sled. So if we put the shellcode at the end of that, and there's 256 possible starting locations, then we would have like a, would it be 20 and 256? 20, like the chance that we land somewhere in that knob sled would be 20 over 256.
Yeah, so I think that's a great sort of intuition here, which is that, so if we're just trying to find the stack at all, we have 256 options, so each time, right, we have, you know, one chance at that. If we were able to, because it's restarting, guess 128 times, that would get us to about a 50% chance that we would have found it somewhere in there. With the knob sleds, now sort of it's okay if we just need to find sort of any one of those five pages that's on the stack. And so now we're looking for not just sort of one place, but five places, kind of increasing our odds. And so our, you know, again, to get back to that 50% chance, we're trying on the order of about 25 times. And so the takeaway here is that randomizing address space and randomizing the stack is great, but if your search space is too small, it doesn't provide too much of a barrier. And so on 32-bit, it's definitely limited. 64-bit is still much more effective. All right, so another question for you. So if we have this sort of C++ program here where we have this point, and we're trying to sort of, you know, learn something here. What initial value of P is going to be sort of the most helpful? All right, so if we look at these, okay, so what about option A? Right, whatever was in the same place as where P is now before is an invalid pointer. Is that gonna help us? No, all right, that's not gonna do much for us. What if P points to a global variable? Right, not likely to be that useful. C, P points to space in the stack that's currently unallocated, but last contained an input buffer. All right, so that's definitely going to be more helpful, right? Because now we have, you know, some, you know, that could definitely be useful for, you know, a buffer overflow, right? And it's an address on the stack. What about D? P points to space on the stack that currently holds return address. Right, so that could potentially be interesting. That could be useful as well, maybe for a different attack, targeting the global offset table, for example. And E, P points to space on the stack is currently unallocated, but last seen a pointer to the last used byte of an array on the stack. Right, sort of similar to C. Right, that address could be, you know, very useful later. And so, again, randomization helps, but sort of being able to inspect things is still going to be possible. So this isn't fully going to solve the problem. And there's other challenges as well with using ASLR. So one thing in practice is that while we've sort of mentioned that, okay, we can have this program, it's designed to be executed where it can be loaded at different addresses. However, in practice, parts of the program are not that flexible. So like these sections and segments are still designed to be together. And so we can still, like, we can still randomize sort of where it starts, but everything else expects to be together. And so even if we have multiple segments in our executable, right, where, you know, these are separate segments and they can be dynamically located, that doesn't necessarily mean that we can just put them all in separate places. And so, again, this is going to reduce our ability to randomize. And we can see this because if we actually look at what these instructions are doing, if we look at sort of like inspecting the machine code here, right, this printf statement is jumping to a relative address based on the current location of the instruction that's executed, right? So we're basing it on the instruction pointer. And if you think about what that's going to mean is that, well, wherever this code is, and if that thing is in another segment, that segment still has to be located at the correct offset from where this loaded segment is, right? So there is this dependency between the separate segments. Just another example of that, you know, here, that we're again using this relative offset here, and if we look at these addresses, and the relative addresses here, we are going between the different sections. So we can't sort of fully just put these, even though they are in some sense located, designed to be position independent, we can't just position them wherever we want. So far so good? Next reasonable question is why? Right? Like, why make this restriction? And it sort of boils down to a choice. Like any other design decision in a system, doing this does have certain benefits. And so if we don't have this restriction where these are sort of loaded together at sort of a fixed known offset, then an alternative is to actually go through and while loading that program, actually go and do the fix up, right? So actually edit the machine code and say, okay, I'm now going to put these segments at some different offset, and then I'm just going to have to fix the machine code so that wherever I chose as the loader is now correct in the program. Does that make sense? You kind of see how we could do that, right? We could actually edit the machine code once we know the correct offset. The linker assumed an offset. The loader knows where it's actually going to be loaded, and so it fixes it to the what's correct. Well, right, there's extra overhead in that. And so Linux said we don't want to be in the business of sort of editing these programs. It also means that once we've done that edit, well, now we sort of have a copy of that program that's only going to work for that particular process with that particular offset. If that code is shared and we want to run it for a different process, well, we can't use it with its new offset, right? Because the offset's going to have to be specific to whatever other process and where those elements are going to be loaded. So again, it's like a lot of things, it becomes a trade-off. We're restricting how much sort of flexibility and randomization we get, but we're simplifying this. Make sense? Any questions? Okay. But this sort of leads to kind of the next challenge here, which is, when we do figure out, if the attacker does figure out where something is, what is learned? Well, because we're going to still have these contiguous regions, if we can learn some part of the stack, well, now we know where the stack is. And we can sort of figure out everything on the stack. Because parts of our executable are grouped together, well, if we can find where any part of that is, well, now we know where the whole range is. Right, same with the library, right? And so on the sort of first slide, we were introducing this, right? We said, assuming we don't leak any pointers, we get this great benefit. Well, that's not necessarily a fair assumption in practice, right? It is, if it's possible to figure out sort of parts, well, that's gonna tell us where things are located. So let's look at a couple examples of this. So first, if we have this this program, and we're printing out sort of the address of F, what are we likely leaking? What address? Anyone know? So if we look at...
I was going to say B.
B, okay. Yeah, it is B.
Okay.
D, right, that doesn't really make, any sense. The others are plausible, but in C++, the beginning of the object is the V table pointer. Kind of the example here is that we're now learning something about where that code is located. Okay, so let's look at another example. A little bit more realistic. So again, assume we have a particular program structure. And we actually do get this leaked value. Now, okay, so that's what happens at sort of running on the real machine, okay? Now, in a different execution with a debugger, we get this particular mapping of addresses. And so what can we figure out for the actual program that's actually running, right? Where we actually got this, you know, on the sort of the target here, based on this information. Let's take a couple minutes. Again, you're welcome to consult your neighbors. All right, so what's the intuition here? Well, the idea is that we have sort of, we can think of it as kind of two address spaces, right? So I'm just kind of drawing this like vertically, you know, it's kind of like the pictures we were seeing before. Sort of one is the address space used by the actual program, and then the other one is what it was in the debugger. Now, because of the randomization, the actual absolute addresses are going to be different, but some parts of this are going to be sort of at the same relative offset. And so if we have the value here was in the real program was at some point, in the debugger it's at some other point, the question is basically which things are always going to be at a known offset. So we can figure out what that offset is using the debugger and then apply it back to the original execution. And so because we're getting the vtable address, which is part of the actual program for this, you know, for this example, something like the stack, right, is going to be at some other address. Right, this is, something on the heap, right, we're not going to be able to figure out. But something like here, because we know something about where the executable is, figuring out a different address in the executable, that's going to be sort of that fixed offset. And so we can compute that. We'll be able to compute the address of something else in the executable, and we'd be able to figure out sort of anything that's in that same relocation group where they're loaded at the same location. Now, something like the C library, right, that's going to be another sort of random address that we're not going to be able to figure out. And so things that are going to be relative to the same object library, we're good. Okay, and we can look at sort of one more example here. Say we have the address for a particular buffer. Again, this is at in some execution, right? We get that. Now, what address would we need to use to sort of make Sternlang run different code? Well, we know that buffer in the original compiled executable is supposed to be at this offset, 0x4040 in the BSS section. But then at runtime, we figure out that, oh, well, it's actually at this address. Right, so now we have that offset between where something was actually placed and where it should have been. Okay, maybe that information itself is not too useful, but we also happen to know where the where this offset jump for the God table entry for Sternlang is, and we know that relative to where buffer should be. And so we can use this again. So we've basically leaked one pointer and then can use that to back calculate something else. And so, the equations, work out something like this, right? We had our sort of where the buffer actually was, where it was in the executable, that gives us some offset. Then if we take that sort of known place at the offset, that gives us where that entry is going to be in the actual running program. All right. Questions? Okay, cool. So there's definitely a lot of benefits here. Right, it makes it harder to guess these addresses. But as kind of we get into this, right, there's a few caveats and there are some implications, which may be, again, like a lot of things, where we have to balance, like, what do we care about, and is this the right model for defending against potential attacks? And the issue is that there's going to be this trade-off between performance and performance and code size versus the ability to implement ASLR, right? And because the issue is because we need this position-independent code. And so as opposed to just being able to put a fixed address in the binary and just use it and be done with it, now we've got to do these calculations. So just like we've been seeing these calculations, look at these offsets, well, the program has to do those as well because it doesn't know where those other segments were located. And so we talked a little bit about editing code. Windows has sort of a different approach where they will do the edits and modifications when choosing those different locations. Now, this causes sort of overhead when doing that fix up. And so these addresses get reused. But it does mean that the overhead of executing is lower, right? You sort of preload the computation rather than doing it dynamically. So there's still a trade-off there. And so we've basically pre-computed all of the relative relocations, lowering the runtime cost. However, because we don't want to do that all the time, if we can rerun the program, Well, it's going to have the same addresses.
We did not like that.
Okay. So we don't have time to fully get through this next example, but I will introduce it to kind of, you know, you sort of think about what the overhead looks like here. So this is an example where we have this lookup table, and the lookup table is actually storing these absolute addresses, right? Like here and here. And so if we relocate this, right, and those return one, return two are no longer at those addresses, well, now we're going to be sort of jumping to some completely invalid location. Right? And so the question is, well, what can we do to essentially add a layer of indirection here? Right? We don't want that fixed address. We want to make this relative. However, we don't want to have a ton of overhead. Right? That's going to be the goal here. And so we can expand this, and I'll highlight the kind of key pieces here, where instead of our table being absolute addresses, now we have these relative addresses, right? We have the location of where we want to go, these return one, relative to where this jump table is. And so we can load that address of the jump table. And because this is going to be sort of at a fixed offset from the code, we can do that relative to our instruction pointer. Now that we have that relative offset, we can index into that table and load the address. And so now we've done that indirection fix up. And so now what we're left with, we can actually jump to. And that will be the correct address of where it was actually located. So there's a couple more slides that go into a little bit more detail, but for now, I think the takeaway is that we took that sort of one instruction, right, and we've turned it into multiple instructions. Right, and so anywhere we wanted to use fixed addresses before, now suddenly we have this extra overhead. And so it's kind of the age-old question, right? How much are we willing to sacrifice for this extra protection? Right? Can we get this up, this sort of overhead low enough that it's worth it? All right. Thanks, everyone. And Professor Rice will be back next week.